Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 2, Text 23. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Sattvam Rajastama Iti Prakritir Gunaishtaye. Yukta para purusha eka ihasya date. Titya daye harivarinchi hareti samgya. Sheyam satatta kal sattva tano ninamshu. Translation. The transcendental personality of Godhead is indirectly associated with the three modes of material nature, namely passion, goodness, and ignorance, and just for the material world's creation, maintenance, and destruction. He accepts the three qualitative forms of Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. Of these three, all human beings can derive ultimate benefit from Vishnu, the form of the quality of goodness. Purport. That Lord Sri Krishna, by his plenary part, should be rendered devotional service, as explained above, is confirmed by this statement. Lord Sri Krishna and his plenary parts are Vishnu Tattva, or the Lordship of Godhead. From Sri Krishna, the next manifestation is Baladev. From Baladev is Sankarshan. From Sankarshan is Narayan. From Narayan there is the second Sankarshana. And from this Sankarshana, the Vishnu Purusha avatars. The Vishnu, or the deity of the quality of goodness in the material world, is the Purusha avatar known as Shirodakashai Vishnu, or Paramatma. Brahma is the deity of Rajas, passion, and Shiva of ignorance. They are the three departmental heads of the three qualities of this material world. Creation is made possible by the goodness of Vishnu, and when it requires to be destroyed, Lord Shiva does it by the Tandava Nritya. The materialist and the foolish human beings worship Brahma and Shiva respectfully. But the pure transcendentalist worship the form of goodness, Vishnu, in his various forms. Vishnu is manifested by his millions and billions of integrated forms and separated forms. The integrated forms are called Godhead, and the separated forms are called the living entities, or the jivas. Both the jivas and Godhead have their original spiritual forms. Jivas are sometimes subjected to the control of material energy, but the Vishnu forms are always controllers of this energy. When Vishnu, the personality of Godhead, appears in the material world, he comes to deliver the conditioned living beings who are under the material energy. Such living beings appear in the material world with the intentions of being lords, and thus they become entrapped by the three modes of nature. As such, the living entities have to change their material coverings for undergoing different terms of imprisonment. The prison house of the material world is created by Brahma under instruction of the personality of Godhead, and at the conclusion of a kalpa, the whole thing is destroyed by Shiva. But as far as maintenance of the prison house is concerned, it is done by Vishnu, as much as the state prison house is maintained by the state. Anyone, therefore, who wishes to get out of this prison house of material existence, which is full of miseries like repetition of birth, death, disease, and old age, must please Lord Vishnu for such liberation. Lord Vishnu is worshipped by devotional service only, and if anyone has to continue prison life in the material world, he may ask for relative facilities for temporary relief from the different demigods like Shiva, Brahma, Indra, and Varuna. No demigod, however, can release the imprisoned living being from the conditioned life and material existence. This can be done only by Vishnu. Therefore, the ultimate benefit may be derived from Vishnu, the personality of Godhead.
Om Gyanati Varandasya Kananchara Shalakaya Chakshuran Malatam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namah Pancha Kalpa Taru Bhyascha Kripa Sindhu Vaibhacha Patitanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasade Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
So to understand things in concept, in context, I think it's always good at the beginning to give a, you know, brief overview. The questions of the sages are there. The first two questions were being answered in this chapter, at least at the beginning of the chapter. The ultimate and absolute good and the essence of the scripture. The answer was pure devotional service, activities intended to please Krishna with sincerity. Sincerity means without pretension, unmixed with any other motive. This is the principle of religion. And that religion should, and he stresses this point, religion is meant for liberation. It's not meant for material gain or enhancing one's position in the material world. And even if one gets material gain, the purpose of that is to preserve the body and senses for the purpose of realizing the absolute truth. The process of realizing the absolute truth is to perform devotional service. Therefore, one should chant, hear, worship, and remember Krishna always. And by doing this, one will become liberated from the tight knot that binds us to karma and all the suffering in this world. And then Sutta Goswami had explained how that process works, how that process of chanting and hearing frees one from any, liberates one from the knot of karma within the heart, and elevates one to the highest realization of understanding the tattva or the truth. Where one has full realization of God and eventually actually has darshan and sees the Supreme Lord. And this is the goal of life, which is achieved by performing devotional service based on chanting and hearing the glories of the Supreme Lord. In other words, the process that we are doing right now is the process that's recommended by the sages of Namasharanya. It's the process that's recommended by the sages of Namasharanya. And it's the process that's recommended all throughout the Srimad Bhagavatam. The process of counteracting Kali Yuga and achieving perfection is devotional service. And then we came to the conclusion of the, which we discussed at the end of last class, that because this process is so effective in elevating and purifying one's consciousness and freeing one from the effects of the modes of material nature, therefore, certainly, not in a new process, but since time immemorial, all transcendentalists have rendered devotional service to Lord Krishna, the personality of Godhead, with great delight. Because such devotional service is enlivening to the self. What's enlivening to the self is the dharma or duty of the self. I explained, this point actually came out very nicely also, that happiness means righteousness. This is the happiness means righteousness. When the self is acting in its constitution, naturally it feels satisfied and enlivened. So this was the conclusion. Since time immemorial, as Srila Prabhupada says in the Bhagavad Gita, the Bhagavad Gita is not an insignificant speculative treatise, but a standard text coming down from time immemorial. So this is how one becomes purified and enlivened by rendering devotional service, Vasudevi Bhagavati Kurvanti, doing devotional service, mudha, with great delight, bhaktin, devotional service, paramaya. Paramaya means to the Supreme Lord, which is Sri Krishna. Everything comes to everything is to support the theme of the Srimad Bhagavatam, that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Everything. So we'll always see, whenever there's a progression of verses that describe a process of self-realization, the conclusion must be there. And the conclusion is, Jadmadyasya Yaton Vayad, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudeva, that Krishna is the Supreme Lord, Param Satyam Dhyamehi. Therefore we should worship Him, we should understand the importance of this. To increase our faith, and therefore to increase our dedication and determination. Faith, meaning trust in something sublime. We have to hear and think about it and realize how significant, how important, and how beneficial this activity is of devotional service. And the essence of devotional service, of sadhana bhakti, is to fix the mind on Krishna. Remember Krishna and never forget Him. Now, Srila Prabhupada, in these verses from 23 to 29, is going to explain the general theme that's actually presented here. That Lord Sri Krishna, by His plenary parts, should be rendered devotional service explained above is confirmed by this statement. So this statement, he's confirming now what he has spoken before, that one should render service to the Paramaya, the Supreme, who is Vasudeva Bhagavati, Personality of God, who is Krishna. That was mentioned in the last verse. And it's going to describe in these verses why. Because only by worship of Krishna can be one liberated and realize the truth. And therefore one should not divert his worship to anything else. And one of the main misconceptions that people have is about the Purusha avatars. Krishna manifests in this world for creation. It says it indirectly associates with the three modes of nature, for the material world's creation, maintenance, and destruction. So in the material, the manifestation of Krishna that people identify generally is as God or the Creator. That's our conception, because we see in terms of matter. So we see God's creationary role as the representation of God or the absolute truth. So God is creating in the material world through his qualitative forms of Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. But of these threes, all human beings can derive ultimate benefit from Vishnu. And this is going to be explained. I like to go to the purport and how Prabhupada explains this very interestingly. He describes the material world as a prison house. In fact, the Sanskrit word for prison house is durga. Dur means difficult and ga means to go. The prison house in the material world is created by Brahma under instructions of the personality of Godhead. At the conclusion of a kalpa, the whole thing is destroyed by Shiva. But as far as maintenance of the prison house is concerned, it is done by Vishnu, as much as the state prison house is maintained by the state. Anyone, therefore, who wishes to get out of the prison house of material existence, which is full of miseries like repetition of birth, death, disease, and old age, must please Lord Vishnu for such liberation. Lord Vishnu is worshipped by devotional service only. And if anyone has to continue prison life in the material world, he may ask for relative facilities for temporary relief from the different demigods like Shiva, Brahma, Indra, and Varuna. No demigod, however, can release the imprisoned living being from the conditioned life of material existence. This can only be done by Vishnu. Therefore, the ultimate benefit may be derived from Vishnu, the personality of Godhead. And therefore, all transcendentalists have been worshipping Krishna since time immemorial. Because Krishna and Vishnu, as Prabhupada explains in the purport, is a manifestation of Krishna. Vishnu is Krishna in the creationary role. It's Krishna, but in the creationary role. And in the creationary role, he's not fully manifest. And Prabhupada gives the example as a man at home goes to the office, and he's maybe a high court judge. He's only manifesting a part of his personality as a very authoritative and powerful personality. But the full personality is manifest at home. So Krishna is God at home, but his full personality is manifest. Just like the people in the court, they only know the person when he sits on the bench. Because that's their relationship, the high court judge when he sits on the court bench. So similarly, the people in the material world, their easiest access to God is in terms of his role here in this material world, which is as the creator. Because they can see God only as great in terms of their conception of greatness. So for the conditioned soul, their conception of greatness is in terms of matter. And they don't have any intimate relationship with God to know the greatness of God in terms of his personality. So they tend to see the creationary role as supreme. Whereas someone who has an intimate relationship with the person, that's not so important to him as his personality, in other words, how he exchanges a loving person. So Krishna is the supreme Lord. He's the supreme personality of Godhead. So, only liberation can come by worshipping him, because he's the maintainer. As Vishnu is maintaining this world, we can only get out by worshipping him. And Vishnu is worshipped by devotional service. And the demigods, they can give you temporary relief, just like the people in the prison house. They can't get you out of the prison house, but they can make your bed, or they can provide you food. They can manage it, but they can't get you out. So, just one other point, why Vishnu can get you out. Just like take a look at the analogy of the prison house. The person who creates the prison house can't get you out. That's Brahma, he builds it. Shiva destroys it, he can't get you out. The person who's maintaining it and regulates the functions of the prison house can get you out. Text 24. Partiva darano dumas tasmaragnis tri maya tamasastu rajastasmad sattvam yad brahma darsanam. Firewood is a transformation of earth, but smoke is better than the raw wood, and fire is still better, for by fire we can derive the benefits of superior knowledge through Vedic sacrifices. Similarly, passion, rajas, is better than ignorance, tamas. But goodness, sattva, is best, because by goodness one could come to realize the absolute truth. So this verse continues the discussion why an intelligent person will only worship Krishna, or how he's manifest in the material world as Vishnu. Just like the last verse, I think a very important word which we didn't discuss was Shreyamsi. Shreyamsi means for the ultimate benefit. It's the same word in the original question. What is the absolute and ultimate good? To manifest in the material world, Krishna is manifesting for creation through three qualitative forms. But Vishnu, worship of Vishnu is the best, because other qualities or forms of the Supreme Lord in the material world are manifested under the conditions of the material energy. So here is also an analogy given to Prabhupada said it is as explained above, one can get released from conditioned life by devotional service to the personality of Godhead. It's further comprehended here that one has to rise to the platform of the mode of goodness so that one can be eligible for the devotional service of the Lord. And this has to do with worshiping Vishnu. Basically, that was explained in previous purports also, that to worship Vishnu, you have to come to the mode of goodness. The analogy is given. There's another analogy given, then I'll explain this analogy. As a spark is coming from the fire, the spark is fire, but separated from the fire, it has the tendency to lose its original nature or quality. So when we come to the material world, we tend to lose our nature or quality as part and parcel of God is lost. So this has the spark, when it falls on dry grass, on wet grass, it extinguishes. That's like ignorance. When it falls on ordinary grass, it maybe or maybe not can awaken its original quality. And when it falls, and that's like passion. Srila Prabhupada says here in the purport, the civilized life of man with a passion for various types of material benefit is a stage of rajas. The rajas stage of life gives a slight clue to the realization of the absolute truth in forms of finer sentiments in philosophy, art, and culture with moral and ethical principles. But when the spark falls on dry grass, then it certainly regains its original quality of fire. So in the soul can cultivate the mode of goodness, then he's on the platform to actually, pursue transcendental realization, ultimately realize God and awaken and uncover his original quality, which is lost in contact or covered in contact with the material world. So therefore, it's a mistake, Prabhupada says, to think that worship of any other form of Krishna in the material world than Vishnu, or the qualitative forms, because they're in contact with the lower modes, and therefore they can't help to awaken worship or association with those forms. Shiva and Brahma, in terms of worship, cannot help to awaken our original Krishna consciousness. And then, so therefore, there's the analogy here, that there are different stages of fire. There's firewood, then there's smoke, and then there's fire. But in terms of sacrifice, until you come to the platform of fire, then you can't have the sacrifice, and you can't get the benefits of superior knowledge through the Vedic sacrifices. So the fire is compared to coming to the goodness, because at that stage there can be result or benefit. Now, so this verse is actually explaining why worshipping Vishnu the result is best. Because something can be deemed best by what you can derive from it. So you can derive one result from goodness. You worship Brahma, you probably can get elevated in the material world in some way. Again, the same analogy. You can elevate yourself materially, but you can't get out. So as mentioned in the last verse, the Shreyamsi, or the ultimate benefit, is by worshipping Vishnu. And it is understood that by goodness, this is my note, one could worship Vishnu, and only by Vishnu worship can one get out of the material world. So again, this point will be stressed. An intelligent person does not divert his mind to anything independent of pure devotional service and worship of Vishnu. Vishnu means Krishna. But here the point made by Prabhupada is also very interesting. Also, that by an expert spiritual master, one at any stage of life can take the devotional service. Although generally it's understood that you have to come to the platform of goodness. And that's the Vedic system. As Prabhupada explained in previous purports, when he described that gradual process of chanting and hearing, then you're established in unalloyed goodness, then the mind becomes enlivened. And then in the purport, Prabhupada explained that the stage of Bhagavad Tattva Vijnana of actually understanding Krishna is above the stage of the mode of goodness. And that realizing the mode of goodness of being a Brahmin is not sufficient. Anyway, the point here that's going to be made by Srila Prabhupada is a little confusing, but the point here that's going to be made by Srila Prabhupada is that by the mercy of spiritual master, at any condition of life, and it explained above, one could get released from the conditioned life of material existence by devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It is further comprehended herein that one has to rise to the platform, the mode of goodness, sattva, so that one can be eligible for the devotional service of the Lord. But even if there are impediments on the progressive path, anyone, even from the platform of tamas, can gradually rise to the sattva platform by the expert direction of the spiritual master. Sincere candidates must therefore approach an expert spiritual master for such a progressive march, and the bona fide expert spiritual master is competent to direct the disciple from any stage of life, tamas, rajas, or sattva. I think Prabhupada sums it up and gives the essence of what's being discussed here. In other words, there is a qualitative difference between the different kinds of worshipping methods as well as the respective results derived from the predominating deities named Brahma, Vishnu, and Hara. Hara means Shiva. So there's a difference between the method of worship and the results. And the Shreyamsi, or the ultimate benefit, is to worship Vishnu. Because by worshipping Vishnu, you can get liberated from this material world or get out. And therefore, since time immemorial, transcendentalists with great delight are worshipping the Paramaya, the possessor of the supreme. Paramaya means that the possessor of the ultimate, which is Vishnu. Text 25.
Tejere munayo tagre bhagavanta madokshajam satvam vishudham shemaya kalpante yenutaniha.
Translation. Previously, all the great sages rendered service unto the personality of Godhead due to his existence above the three modes of nature. They worshipped him to become free from material conditions and therefore derive the ultimate benefit. Whoever follows such great authorities is also eligible for liberation from the material world. I'm saying as each verse progresses, the theme or the message that we're supposed to understand to help us progress towards the understanding of tattva, the truth. Bhagavatam's nice like that. It clears up any if you have misconceptions, then you will not realize tattva. The purpose of human life is to realize tattva, or the truth, and to live by that tattva. And only living by truth, which is actually called dharma, or dharma is the activities that bring you towards truth, can you actually become satisfied. So here it's a very, previously all great sages rendered service unto the person. Why? Because Vishnu is adokshajam, Bhagavantam adokshajam. He is transcendental to the three modes, sattvam, vishuddham. His existence is transcendental. And therefore they worship him to become free from the material world. Again, pious souls give up the worship of everything else and worship Vishnu. Not Brahma, not Shiva, but Vishnu or Krishna. And therefore whoever follows such great authorities is also eligible for liberation from the material world. I'll read Prabhupada's purport. The purpose of performing religion is neither to profit by material gain, nor to get the simple knowledge of discerning matter from spirit. The ultimate aim of religious performance is to release one from material bondage and regain the life of freedom in the transcendental world. For the personality of God, it is the Supreme Person. Laws of religion, therefore, are directly enacted by the personality of God, and except for the Mahajans, or the authorized agents of the Lord, no one knows the purpose of religion. The purpose of people who desire their own good should follow the Mahajans, the great souls. And they worship Vishnu to get the ultimate benefit. And by following them, we also can get the ultimate benefit. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, text 26. Mumukshavo gora rupam hitva bhuta patimata Narayana kavashanta bhajantehi anasuyava. Translation. Those who are serious about liberation are certainly non-envious and they respect all. Yet they reject the horrible and ghastly forms of the demigods and worship only the all-blissful forms of Lord Vishnu and his plenary portions. Narayana, Narayana means Vishnu, same. Narayana, Kala, Kala means plenary portions of Vishnu. So they worship Vishnu Tattva, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Param Satyam Dimahi. Lord Shiva is a very difficult tattva or truth to understand. Because he's not the living entity, and he's not Vishnu tattva. But he's Krishna transformed in contact with the material world. So there's some touch of the material conditions. And therefore to worship Lord Shiva or Lord Brahma, who is a pious living entity, to worship them as devotees, you can make advancement, but to worship them as supreme, in that misconception, then because they're tinged with material conditions, you cannot actually receive the ultimate benefit, which is to get out of the material world. Because they themselves have contact with the material world. And through these particular verses, it stresses that Vishnu, adokshajam, is transcendental, transcendental. I think also in 23, there's also a Vishnu is transcendental. I don't know the exact word. I'm kind of looking for it. So here, continuing with the same theme, serious people who are serious about mumukshava, desiring liberation, they worship the Narayana Kala, Vishnu, Vajanti, they worship. And they don't worship. They reject the forms of demigod worship. Because they cannot give the ultimate benefit. They reject those forms of demigod worship. Here it says, Gora, Rupam, horrible forms, and Prabhupada explains they sometimes they're manifest for people in the mode of ignorance and have very ghastly forms sometimes. But at the same time, they're respectful of all, and Prabhupada explains this. In other words, although we don't worship the demigods, they're also servants of Vishnu. It's not that we hate the demigods. We're just against it, the ignorance of worshiping them as supreme, when actually by worshiping them, because they're either separated parts and parcels, in other words, they're not Vishnu Tattva. They do not. Prabhupada explains. See, the Vishnu Tattvas are living beings equally powerful as the original form of the personality of Godhead, and they display the different categories of power in consideration of different times and circumstances. The jivas, the living entities, the separated parts and parcel, are powerful by limitation. They do not have the unlimited power like Vishnu Tattvas. So you cannot get the same result from worshipping them. But at the same time, or worshipping Lord Shiva, or worshipping the demigods, you cannot get the same destination or same result. You certainly can't get the ultimate benefit. But at the same time, we shouldn't make the misconception that we should disrespect them. So those who worship Vishnu, it's not they disrespect other forms. They're not envious. Highly qualified Brahmins situated in the mode of goodness have no grudges against the mode of worship of others. They have all respect for other demigods. They know that these features are different servitors under different conditions, yet they reject them. They concentrate only on the forms of Vishnu because they're serious about liberation from the material conditions. And then it gave the story of Hiranyakashipu, that Lord Brahma could not give Hiranyakashipu liberation. So Hiranyakashipu is approaching, performing austerities to approach Lord Brahma, but Lord Brahma couldn't give him liberation. And therefore Prabhupada concludes, Lord Vishnu and none else is called Muktipada, or the Supreme Personality of Godhead who can bestow mukti upon us. So this is all verses in the Bhagavad Gita that demigods can worship temporary, can only give temporary results. And Kaimaistarta Hitta Jnana Papadyante Devata. Those who worship are less intelligent, who worship the demigods. And for this reason, this sums it up. Only that candidates for liberation deliberately reject the worship of demigods, although they have no respect for any of them. So I'm going to say this in one way. I wonder sometimes how much relevance this is, because this is not our problem in one sense. I'm not going to say it's not relevant. We don't worship the demigods. We didn't know about the demigods before we met Prabhupada. But this is definitely a misconception that can come up. Same theme will be continued. Rajastamas prakritaya shamashila bhajanti vai Pitreya Bhuta Prajay Sadam Sri Aishwarya Prajipsava. Those who are in the modes of passion and ignorance worship the forefathers. Other living beings and the demigods who are in charge of cosmic activities for they are urged by a desire to be materially benefited with women, wealth, power, and progeny. So same thing, less intelligent people, they're diverted to sense gratification. They're not into liberation. And therefore, they don't approach Vishnu. In their heart, they're inspired to approach the particular demigod who can, I guess, by a tinge of that material conditioning, kind of can attract them and manifest the result that they want, which is some benefit within the material world. And therefore, the conclusion is given. Vasudeva Paraveda, Vasudeva Paramukha, Vasudeva Parayoga, Vasudeva Parakriya, Vasudeva Param Jnanam, Vasudeva Param Tapa, Vasudeva Paro Dharmo, Vasudeva Param Gati. So it explains if Krishna is actually the only object of worship. In the revealed scripture, the ultimate object of knowledge is Sri Krishna, the personality of Godhead. The purpose of performing sacrifice is to please him. Yoga is for realizing him. All fruitive activities are ultimately rewarded by him only. He is the supreme knowledge, and all severe austerities are performed to know him. Religion, dharma, is rendering loving service unto him. He is the supreme goal of life. So again, Vasudeva Paro Dharma. Vasudeva Paragati. He's the Paro Dharma. In other words, Dharma is ultimately meant for real religion is rendering service to him, and he's the supreme goal of life. It seems that all the answers are it's still in different, from different perspectives answering that same question. What is the ultimate and absolute good, and what is the essence of the scriptures? So here it seems to, you know, Sutta Goswami is the preacher. So he knows the audience, and he knows the misconceptions that the audience will have, even when he may speak the truth. Like you can speak to a particular Indian and you could say, yes, you know, you should worship Krishna and dedicate your life, and he'll say, yes, 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 yes. You know, yes, I am worshiping Krishna. And Shiva, and Brahma, and Durga, and my grandfather, and Sai Baba, and everyone else. Yes, 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 yes. So therefore, Sutta Goswami, he's bringing out that conclusion. And therefore, as a, you know, preacher who's understanding the audience and their thinking, And knowing that there's so many misconceptions about so many gods, you know, he's specifically bringing out how Krishna manifests in the world, and that it's not yes, 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 worship Shiva. It's not yes, yes, worship Lord Brahma. It's worshiping Vasudeva, Vasudeva, Vasudeva Parodharma. When I say yato bhakti, or worship the transcendence, when I'm saying savai pumso paro dharmo yato bhakti adoksaje, transcendence, that means Krishna, that means Vasudeva. He's honing in and making this point very, very clear. Vedaischa sarveham eva vedyo vedanta krit vedavid eva chaha. Of all the Vedas, Krishna is to be known. When Satyaraj Prabhu wrote these articles on the different demigods, And back to Godhead, and presented how, you know, they weren't supreme. There was so much controversy in back to Godhead. People were actually so disturbed. So you can see why Sutta Goswami has to make this concept. And even if we don't have a particular problem with it, still, we have to know how to present it. And therefore, these verses are very important. It's Vasudeva Para Veda. He's the ultimate goal of the Vedas, of sacrifice, of yoga, of karma, of jnana, of tapasya, of dharma, and the supreme. And Prabhupada therefore says that Sri Krishna, the personality of God, is the only object of worship, is confirmed in these two shlokas. In the Vedic literature, there is the same objective, establishing one's relationship and ultimately reviving our lost loving relationship unto him. That is the sum and substance of the Vedas. In the Bhagavad Gita, the same theory is confirmed by the Lord in his own words. The ultimate purpose of the Vedas is to know him only. All the revealed scriptures are prepared by the Lord through his incarnation in the body of Srila Vyas, just to remind the fallen souls, conditioned by material nature, of Sri Krishna, the personality of Godhead. No demigod can award freedom from material bondage. This is the verdict. So this is the conclusion. The Paraveda, which shows how Krishna is the only object of worship. It's confirmed in these shlokas, Prabhupada said. So let's go through the different points of in the purport how Krishna or Vasudeva is the ultimate goal of all sacrifices, religion, etc. So Vasudeva Paraveda in the Vedic literature is the same objective, establishing one's relationship and ultimately reviving our lost loving service unto him. That is the sum and substance of the Vedas. In the Bhagavad Gita, the same theory is confirmed by the Lord in his own words. The ultimate purpose of the Vedas is to know him only. Vedaischa sarveham eva vedyo. Vedantavid evavid evachaham. All the revealed scriptures are prepared by the Lord through his incarnation of Vyasadeva, just to remind the fallen souls, conditioned by material nature, of Sri Krishna, the personality of Godhead. There's no other verdict in the Vedic literatures. Okay. That's Vasudeva Paraveda. Then Vasudeva Paramukha, he's the ultimate goal of all sacrifices, Srila Prabhupada presents here. Clearly states, but another name of Vasudeva is Yajna, sacrifice. All such sacrifices are meant for realizing the truth about Vasudeva. And in the Bhagavad Gita, it's clearly stated that all sacrifices and all activities are to be conducted for the satisfaction of Yajna or Vishnu, the personality of Godhead. Yajna vai Vishnu. Yajna is Vishnu. And in all sacrifices, Vishnu is the ultimate beneficiary, and his name has to be invoked. That's there, definitely in the Vedas. He's the ultimate goal of yoga. Srila Prabhupada mentions the different yogic processes are all meant for concentrating upon the localized aspect of Vasudeva represented as Paramatma. So Paramatma realization is but a partial realization of Vasudeva. And if one is successful in that attempt, one realizes Vasudeva in full. So it's ultimately to represent, to realize, yoga is for realizing Paramatma, which is a manifestation of Vasudeva. In terms of the cultivation of knowledge, Prabhupada discusses how according to Bhagavad Gita, there are 18 items in culturing knowledge. By culture of knowledge, one becomes and all culture of knowledge culminates in devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudeva. Sripara-gyanam. One should accept voluntary bodily inconvenience for the sake of knowing Vasudeva, because that is the way of real austerities. Otherwise, all forms of austerities are classified as modes of passion and ignorance. Passion and ignorance cannot end the misery of life. Only the mode of goodness can mitigate the threefold miseries of life. Vasudeva and Devaki, the so-called father and mother of Krishna, underwent penances to get Vasudeva as their son. Their conclusion, therefore, if any austerities have to be done, they must be done to achieve the end of knowledge, Vasudeva. So in this way, throughout the purport, it's a long purport. Of course, we're not going to go over everything in the purport. But all items of knowledge and religion, religious practices, the object of worship is Krishna. The ultimate goal is Krishna. This is also presented in Bhagavad Gita. Just going to read on 134. Therefore, all culture of knowledge, austerity, sacrifice, and activities should be aimed at changing the quality of the influence that is acting upon us. For the present, we are being controlled by the external energy of the Lord, and just to change the quality of the influence, we must endeavor to cultivate spiritual energy. In Bhagavad Gita, it says that those who are Mahatmas, or those whose minds have been so broadened as to engage in the service of Lord Krishna, are under the influence of the internal potency. And the effect is that such broad-minded living beings are constantly engaged in the service of the Lord without deviation. That should be the aim of life, and that is the verdict of all Vedic literatures. So a great soul, according to Bhagavad Gita, Mahatmanastamam Partha, Daivim Prakritim Ashuta. A great soul is one who takes shelter of Krishna's internal energy. When you surrender to Krishna, then you come under the shelter of his internal potency, which facilitates your service to him. And when you do not surrender to Krishna, then to facilitate your enjoyment or your desire to be the controller and the enjoyer, you come under his external energy. So therefore, the aim of all culture of knowledge, austerity, sacrifice, etc., should be aimed at changing the quality of influence that is acting upon us, as Prabhupada said, from the external to internal. And that's the purpose of all the Vedic sacrifices and all the processes that are mentioned here, from Veda to Mukha, Yoga, Kriya, Gyanam, Tapa. They're all meant for that purpose. Even if they're not directly connected with Krishna consciousness, they push one towards that point. And therefore Prabhupada says in the Bhagavad Gita, commenting on the verse, yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata. Whenever and wherever there's a discrepancy of religion, or you know, dharma, religious activities, then Krishna comes to correct that. Because he says all of these push one towards full surrender of Krishna. That's the whole Vedic process, is pushing one towards surrender to Krishna. That's the goal. So therefore Prabhupada's made, his comment on Vasudeva Paragati. He's the ultimate goal. Of all these processes, Krishna is the ultimate goal. And a Mahatma is one who has come to the point of full surrender. He's not just purifying himself by tapasya and sacrifice, but he's actually come to the goal of all that, which is surrender to Krishna and shelter of the internal potency. Very interesting sentence on 134 again. Therefore, all culture of knowledge, austerity, sacrifice, and activity should be aimed at changing the quality of the influence that is acting upon us. Okay, and now Prabhupada gives a summary of this whole theme and message that's being presented by Suta Goswami, and I want to complete it by reading from the purport. Actually, as I'm doing this overview, it's very nice that I'm looking more and more towards the purports and trying to really extract how Prabhupada just presents the essence of these messages. Very succinct and potent ways. So this is the verdict. No one should bother himself with fruitive activities or dry speculation about transcendental knowledge. Everyone should once engage himself in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. Nor should one worship demigods who work as different hands of the Lord for creation, maintenance, and destruction of the material world. There are innumerable powerful demigods who look over the external management of the material world. They are all different assisting hands of Lord Vasudeva. Even Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma are included in the list of demigods, but Lord Vishnu or Vasudeva is always transcendentally situated. Even though he accepts this is a summary of everything we've been talking about. even though he accepts the quality of goodness of the material world, he is still transcendental to all material modes. In other words, he's accepting goodness, but he's transcendental. The following example will clear that matter more explicitly. In the prison house, there are the prisoners and the managers of the prison house. Both the managers and the prisoners are bound by the laws of the king. But even though the king sometimes comes in the prison, he is not bound by the laws of the prison house. The king is therefore always transcendental to the laws of the prison house, as the Lord is always transcendental to the laws of the material world. This position is transcendental. Now, I want to just, to support this point, just again go back to text 27 and finish this section up. Those who are in the modes of passion and ignorance worship the forefathers, other living beings and demigods who are in charge of cosmic activities, for they are urged by a desire to be materially benefited with women, wealth, power, and progeny. Purport, there is no need to worship the demigods of whatsoever category if one is serious about going back to Godhead. Because you worship the demigods to get your material needs met, not to get out. Because the demigods cannot give liberation. Because they themselves are living entities within this material world. They cannot give liberation. Only Vishnu can give liberation. So there's no need to worship the demigods. Why? One is because they only can give material enjoyment. And therefore Prabhupada says we should never desire to increase the depth of material enjoyment. Material enjoyment should be accepted only up to the point of bare necessities of life and not more or less than that. To accept more material enjoyment means to bind oneself more and more to the miseries of material existence. More wealth, more women, and false aristocracy are some of the demands of the materially disposed man, because he has no information of the benefit derived from Vishnu worship. By Vishnu worship, one could derive benefit in this life as well as in the life after death. Forgetting these principles, foolish people who are after more wealth, more wives, and more children worship various demigods. The aim of life is to end the miseries of life and not to increase them. So there's no need to worship the demigods. And even if you want material enjoyment, there's no need to worship the demigods. And Prabhupada makes that clear. For material enjoyment, there is no need to approach the demigods. The demigods are but servants of the Lord. As such, they are duty-bound to supply the necessity of life in the form of water, light, etc. In italics, Prabhupada says, one should work hard and worship the Supreme Lord by the fruits of one's hard labor for existence. And that should be the motto of life. We should worship Vishnu. The ultimate benefit can be derived from Vishnu. And even if you want material things, the demigods are duty-bound to supply them if you worship Vishnu. One should be careful to execute occupational service with faith in God in the proper way, and that will lead one gradually on the progressive march back to Godhead. Now, the last part of the purport's interesting because Prabhupada quotes from the 10th canto, where in Vrindavan, where Krishna himself, in his own pastimes, established his exclusive worship. So this is a reference from Krishna book which will help us to understand what point Sutta Goswami is actually bringing out to the sages of Namasharanya right here. So Lord Sri Krishna, when he was personally present at Vrajadam, stopped the worship of the demigod Indra and advised the residents of Vraja to worship by their business and to have faith in God. Worshipping the multi-demigods for material gain is practically a perversity of religion. This sort of religious activity has been condemned in the very beginning of Bhagavatam as Kaitava Dharma. There is only one religion in the world to be followed by one and all, and that is Bhagavad Dharma, or the religion which teaches one to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead and no one else. So when Krishna was in Vrindavan, I'm not going to tell the whole story, but his father was worshiping Indra for the rains, and then Krishna came and by different arguments stopped his father from worshiping Indra and asked him to worship Govardhan Hill. And ultimately, the whole pastime is to establish the exclusive worship of Krishna. That's why Krishna came. to establish the exclusive worship of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that's what this particular section is about. Before we go on, do you have any questions about this section? It's clear, therefore, since time immemorial, with great happiness, from the previous section, the transcendentalists have worshipped Krishna. And that's what the Bhagavatam is presenting as the process of liberation. Now, just a little bit review. So far, two of the questions have been answered, and I think this last section was also quite much related to the first two questions. What is the ultimate absolute good, and what is the essence of the scriptures? It's to worship Krishna and perform devotional service. And Sutta Goswami has very, very nicely presented this answer, beginning with the direct statement that the supreme dharma is to worship Krishna without any cause and without any break. And then he elaborated on that. And, you know, from that, automatically all other results come, detachment and knowledge. And this is the purpose of dharma and religion, and we should, you know, human life is meant for realizing tattva, realizing this truth. And it can only be realized by devotional service. And therefore the purpose of all our activities is to please Krishna. We should chant and hear and worship. And by that, the hridaya grantha, the knot in the heart of karma, which binds us to the material world, is cut simply by remembering Krishna. And then it was a very beautiful description of how that exactly happens by the process of chanting and hearing. And Krishna within our heart, he clears all misgivings and liberates us from material desires, and we gradually become elevated, and bhagavatattva vijnanam, we actually realize the truth. And therefore, all transcendentalists of time immemorial, they've worshipped Krishna. And here in this last section, it's clearly presented how Krishna is the ultimate goal and the supreme object of worship. That, I think it's very, very clear now what the answer to those first two questions are. And if we remember, we discussed at the very beginning the significance of those questions, because those questions are asked by the sages of Naimisharanya at the beginning of Kali Yuga for the benefit of mankind, seeing the terrible conditions that we'd all be in. So this was their answer of what we should do if we want to be satisfied in self. We should worship Krishna by the process of chanting and hearing, which means to hear the Srimad Bhagavatam, which means exactly what we're doing now. What we're doing now is the process recommended by the sages, by Sutta Goswami, in answer to the sages of Naimisharanya's question of the ultimate and absolute good, so that we today can become satisfied, who are unfortunately immersed in the miseries and entanglements of Kali Yuga. Now his next question, not next, but the fourth question is going to be answered. Because if you remember the first chapter, he describes how one can be uplifted by hearing about the Lord's incarnations. And then he begins to describe some glorification of Krishna, why we should hear about Krishna, because even his holy name, even by, what to speak of worshiping Krishna, even by chanting his name, one can become liberated. This is his name, which is feared by fear personified. What to speak about worshiping Krishna, but even the association with those who worship him, what to speak of worship Krishna, but even the devotees of Krishna are more purified than even bathing in the Ganges. So what to speak of the person Krishna? So it was getting up to this point again about worshipping Krishna, and therefore who desiring deliverance in the age of Kali will not worship Krishna? And then after that, there were two questions about the Lord's incarnations. And the first question dealt with Krishna's interaction with the material world. The exact number of that question, I think I should go back and see exactly. Text 17 asks about his incarnations, but it says, Lilaya Dadata Kala. Kala means incarnations. It means ete chamsa kala pumsa. Parts of the planet. Kala refers actually to his incarnations in the material world. And his incarnations in the material world are Vishnu or Narayan. They're called the Purusha avatars. So that question, 1117, tell us about the incarnations as the Lord creates the material world. I mentioned before the Supreme Lord basically has two types of incarnations in this world. One incarnation, one pastime or activity of the Supreme Lord that we should hear about is how he creates this material world. That's called the Purusha avatars. And the other pastime or activity of the Supreme Lord in the material world is how he enters into the material world and performs various pastimes or activities to attract us. Is that heard on, in the background too much? The family?
I'm not really seeing what I'm
hearing. Well, you would hear it from here.
I definitely hear it.
A little bit, right? Not that loud. Well, it's not disturbing me. It sounds transcendental because it's Bengali. So he's now going to describe the Purusha avatars. And as it answers question 1117, how the Lord assumes the form to create the world. So that's beginning in text 30. So we'll go over them briefly. So evadam sasajagre bhagavanatma maya sarasadupayacha sao gunamaya guno vibhu. In the beginning of the material creation, that absolute personality of Godhead Vasudev, in his transcendental position, created the energies of cause and effect by his own internal energy. Purport. The position of the Lord is always transcendental because the causal and effectual energies required for creation of the material world were also created by him. He is unaffected, therefore, by the qualities of the material modes. His existence, form, activities, and paraphernalia all existed before the material creation. He is all spiritual, has nothing to do with the qualities in the material world, which are qualitatively distinct from the spiritual qualities of the Lord. So it's a little asterisk, and there's a statement by Shankaracharya, who's head of the Mahavadi school, and he wrote a verse, Narayana paro vyaktat. Narayana is before the material manifestation. And therefore it says, set asat, this word set asat, cause and effect. He created cause and effect. He's transcendental to cause and effect. In other words, the workings of the material world. Bhagavan, atmamayam, by his personal potency, he created. Now, this word here, this verse, you have to remind me, I'd like to maybe the next class comment on again, after I do some research, because in the Chaturshloki Bhagavatam, the four verses spoken at the beginning of the creation by Lord Krishna to Lord Brahma, I remember they discuss, the first two verses discuss Sambandha Gyan, the third verse, Priyojan again, and the fourth verse, Abhide again. So Sambandha again means, Sambandha basically means, there's Krishna, there's the Supreme Lord. Prabhupada said knowledge means matter, spirit, and the controller of both. That's Sambandha again. But to understand matter, spirit, and the controller of both, to understand the material world, the living entity, and God, you have to understand the relationship, the interrelationships between them all. That's Sambandha again. So in the very first verse of the chapter Shloki, it's very, very similar to this verse here. The same words. I should bring it and read it the next time. But the same concept, that verse says, it was I, he's talking to Brahma, it was I who existed before this sadasat, this cause and effect, this material creation. I existed during and I existed after. And therefore it means that Krishna, or the form of Krishna, the personality of Krishna, is existing before the creation. He's not a product of the creation. And that's basically Buddhistic and Mayavadi, Advaita impersonalist philosophy. Right? That distinctions and forms are creations of the material world. But before the material world even began to create, Krishna was existing. He said, it was I. Prabhupada said, I refers to the person. He existed before all this. And he's talking to Lord Brahma. So he existed before. And in the beginning, he created through his kala, or his portion of the plenary portion, which is Kanana Dakshai Vishnu. So this is describing the creation beginning with Kanana Dakshai Vishnu. From Kanana Dakshai, there's two types of creation. This is going to be discussed in the second canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. There's 10 subject matters of the Srimad Bhagavatam. The first two have to deal with creation. So there's two types of creation, sarga, visarga. Sarga means the creation of the material elements, and visarga means their assemblage. So the creation of the material elements come from Karna Dakshai Vishnu. He's the first manifestation of Vishnu, who is Gunamayi Aguna. He's a guna. He's transcendental to the Gunamayi, Gunamayo, Gunamaya, the modes of material nature. He's transcendental. Text 31. Taya vilasateshvesu guneshu gunavaniva antapavishtabhati. After creating the material substance, the Lord Vasudeva expands himself and enters into it. Although he is within the material modes of nature and appears to be one of the created beings, he is always fully enlightened in his transcendental position. So vijnanena vidrimbita, he's fully enlightened in transcendental consciousness, although antapavishta abhati, he appears to be within. He appears to be within. So this is Garbha Dakshai Vishnu, this Garbha Dakshai Vishnu. He enters into the universes and creates the universes. He begins to assemble them, actually through Lord Brahma. He assembles the material elements, but he remains again transcendental. And here it quotes from the Mundaka Upanishads, the difference between the living entity, the super soul, and the conditioned soul. The conditioned soul, living entity, is controlled by the laws of nature, while the Paramatma, or the super soul, is the controller of the material energy. There's a difference. The Paramatma enters into the heart with the living entity, but he's the controller. And that's what this verse is about. Although Vishnu enters into the material energy, enters into the material world, even enters into the heart, he remains the controller. And the example is given in the purport here of two birds on a tree. One bird is eating the fruits of happiness, distress, and the other bird is witnessing. So in other words, the witnessing bird is the Paramatma. And he's witnessing. He's not entangled within the material world. He's witnessing. He's transcendental, and that's the difference. So this is the point that Srila Prabhupada is bringing out. As Sutta Goswami is explaining how Krishna interacts with the material world in terms of creation, both by assembling the material elements, and here in this verse, entering into them, creating the material elements, that was the last verse, and here entering into the material elements and assembling them, he's remaining transcendental. This is the sambandha gyan. This is Krishna's relationship with matter. You understand? He's unaffected, although entering within. Okay, we'll read the next verse. Yataya vihito vaniya tarishve kasvayonishu naneva bhati vishvatma puteshu chatata puman. The Lord as super soul pervades all things, just as fire permeates wood. And so he appears to be of many varieties, though he is the absolute one without a second. Now this verse, continuing to describe, this is Shira Dakshai Vishnu. This is Shira Dakshai Vishnu. So 32 and 33 are going to describe the two functions of Shira Dakshai Vishnu. Well, it's all Vishnu, but he pervades the whole universe. This is just a kala apart. This is mentioned in Bhagavad Gita. Krishna says, just by a fragment of my, I pervade the whole universe. So that's Vishnu. Just by a part of Krishna, he's pervading the whole universe. Everything. Just as fire permeates wood, it's a nice example. In wood there's fire, but you can't see it, although it's there. There's fire in wood. So Krishna is within all the material worlds. Purport, Lord Vasudeva, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, by one of his plenary ports expands himself all over the material world, and his existence can be perceived even within the atomic energy. Matter, antimatter, proton, neutron are all different effects of the Paramatma feature of the Lord. As from wood, fire can be manifested, or as butter can be churned out of milk. So the presence of the Lord as Paramatma can be felt by the process of legitimate hearing and chanting of the transcendental subjects, which are specially treated in the Vedic literatures like the Upanishads and the Vedanta. So by this process of chanting and hearing, we can extract the presence of Krishna. We can understand Krishna's presence in this world. He's pervading everything. Matapratanam nanyat kinchit asti dananjaya. Everything is resting on me as pearls are resting on a thread. So Krishna is the principle and essence of everything. This is very similar to the 7th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Srimad Bhagavatam is the bona fide explanation of these Vedic literatures. So the chanting and hearing process again comes back to the Bhagavatam. The Lord can be realized through the oral reception of the transcendental message, and that is the only way to experience the transcendental subject. Now very nice, as Prabhupada is presenting, as fire is kindled from wood by another fire, the divine consciousness of man can similarly be kindled by another divine grace. His divine grace, the spiritual master, can kindle the spirit fire from the wood-like living entity by imparting proper spiritual messages injected through the receptive ear. Therefore, one is required to approach the proper spiritual master with receptive ears only, and thus divine existence is gradually realized. The difference between animality and humanity lies in this process only. A human being can hear properly, whereas an animal cannot. So this is Bhaktivedanta purports. Sutta Goswami is presenting how the Super Soul pervades everything, and Srila Prabhupada is very nicely presenting here this, as fire permeates wood, how you can realize it by the process of hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. And this is the difference between a human being and an animal, that an animal, that a human being is hearing properly from the proper source. We're actually finally, James, engaged in human life by chanting and hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam. Let's go on to text 33, which describes the Super Soul further. Asau gunamaya bhava bhuta shukshmendriyatmavi swanirmiteshu nirveshto bhunte bhuteshu tadgunan. The Super Soul enters into the bodies of the created beings who are influenced by the modes of material nature and causes them to enjoy the effects of these modes by the subtle mind. So this is the other effect of the Paramatma. He is the permitter. What is the other word? What is it? Permitter? There's some other word in Bhagavad Gita. He's the overseer and permitter. He's sanctioning everything. So he enters into the heart of a living entity. He is so kind that he constantly remains with the living being as Paramatma and always tries to convert the living entities towards the real happiness. He's so kind that he enters into our body. I think Prabhupada gave the example, even if you take the body of a hog, the Lord is so kind that as Paramatma he enters. And he's witnessing and he's just waiting for you to control your senses and stop taking dictation to the from the material energy. And therefore turn to him and hear his instructions and hear tattva and hear knowledge and hear how to get out of the material world and hear how to be established in your pure position. That's the only purpose of Krishna coming to this world, to liberate the conditioned souls and purify their consciousness. So the Super Soul enters. So that purport you should read. Again, I'm lecturing on these verses, but without reading the purports, Prabhupada's purports, the proper knowledge will not come. I'm lecturing on them with the understanding that people are reading the purports. So I hope you're reading the purports. Text 34. Okay, so before we go to 34, so that's the answer to 1.1.17, how the Supreme Lord interacts with the material world. Very important aspect of sambandhagyan, or knowledge of relationship. This is the relationship between Krishna and the material world. Why he comes, and how he interacts, and what his position is. We can see how he interacts with the Super Soul, why he's here. Next verse. Bhavayatyesha satvena lokan vai loka bhavana Lilavatara Nuroto Devatirya Naradishu. Thus the Lord of the universes maintains all planets inhabited by demigods, men, and lower animals. Assuming the roles of incarnations, he performs pastimes to reclaim those in the mode of pure goodness. So this answers the third question. For what purpose does Krishna come? Well, he doesn't come because he's forced to come, like we're forced to come due to fruit of consciousness, and therefore we get material bodies due to karma. We're forced to come by our past activities. No, he comes by his own will. Ajopi san avyayatma bhutanam ishvarapisam Prakritim Swam Svadishta Sambhavat Yatmamaya. He comes by his own will to the material world. It's his own purpose. And what is his purpose? It's not to enjoy the material world, but it's to reclaim the conditioned souls. Assuming the roles of incarnations. So that's his purpose. And we'll read about that purpose. And then there are innumerable material universes, and each and every universe there are innumerable planets inhabited by different grades of living entities and different modes of nature. The Lord Vishnu incarnates himself in each and every one of them and in each and every type of living society. He manifests his transcendental pastimes amongst them to create the desire to go back to Godhead. So that's the purpose of Krishna in the world, and that's the purpose of the devotee in the world, to change our desire. Because we're here in the material world simply because we want to be here. And we want to be here because we want facility to be the controller and the enjoyer, a position we cannot have by our own constitution. So we have to change our desire. So he comes to change desire by exhibiting different pastimes so that we become attracted to his service. The Lord does not change his original transcendental position, but he appears to be differently manifested according to the particular time, circumstance, and society. He comes as korma, a tortoise. He comes as matsya, a fish. But he does not change his transcendental position. And similarly, he comes as Krishna, who appears as a human being. And he steals butter, and he has pastimes with the gopis, but he does not change his transcendental position. Sometimes he incarnates himself or empowers a suitable living being to act for him, but in either case, the purpose is the same. The Lord wants the suffering living entities to go back home, back to Godhead. This is the answer to that third question. What purpose does he appear? The happiness which the living beings are hankering for is not to be found within any corner of the innumerable universe of material planets. The eternal happiness which a living entity wants is obtainable in the kingdom of God. But the forgetful living beings under the influence of material modes have no information of the kingdom of God. The Lord therefore comes to propagate the message of the kingdom of God, either personally as an incarnation or through his bona fide representative as the good son of God. So he comes to propagate the message of the kingdom of God. And that's why he comes as Krishna. He comes as Krishna to exhibit his pastimes so that we can hear about them and therefore develop an attraction for becoming Krishna's devotee. And that's what we're doing now in hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam. We're hearing about Krishna as he came to the material world. The whole Bhagavatam is so that we can hear properly the 10th canto and hear about Krishna's pastimes. He came here to exhibit these wonderful pastimes of loving relationships with his devotees, so we can become attracted to Krishna and become attracted to becoming his devotee. And by nourishing that attraction and nourishing that desire, we will automatically transcend this material world and go back to Godhead. Such incarnations or sons of God are not making propaganda for going back to Godhead only within the human society. Their work is also going on in all types of society among demigods and those other than human beings. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purports of the first canto, second chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Divinity and Divine Service. Any questions, James? Okay, then we'll end. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.